I remember several years ago where Father began to impress upon me, don't just pray for provisions. Ask me to show you where the provisions are. And I changed my prayers. I said, Father, you know the need that I have. Everything that we need is already in the earth. But if I don't have eyes to see it, if you don't lead me to it, if you don't make those connections that I need to make, if you don't connect me to the source, just as he connected the prophets, he brought the raven, he brought the widow, Father know how to tell. He will show you where your river is. He will show you whose house to go to. He will order your steps to where you're in the right place at the right time, making the right connection, which is why it's important for us to hear his voice. So I would pray, Father, show me what my... I wasn't just asking him for provisions. I wasn't just telling him we got needs. You know our needs. You know, you need to meet our needs. Okay, you know, we're running up on a deadline. He's like, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? No, he says, you pray. You want me to order your steps? Let me lead you. Let me guide you. Let me give you the right connection. And I begin to pray. Show me where the provisions are. Show me where the provisions are. If it's in the earth, I need to know where they are. Shalom, saints, and welcome to our verse-by-verse study of the book of Genesis. I'm your host and teacher, Arthur Bailey. In our last podcast, Jehovah calls Jacob out from amongst his kindred in Haran to return to his kindred in Canaan. On the third day, after Jacob had fled from Laban and taken his wives, children, and all his livestock and possessions, Laban was told that Jacob had fled. Laban pursued Jacob for 7 days. Laban shows his intent was to hurt Jacob and possibly kill him and take all his possessions that Laban still laid claim to. However, Jehovah came to Laban in a dream and warned him to take heed how he spoke to Jacob. Today's study title is, Jehovah Protects His People. So, let's study. We are going to continue in and conclude Genesis chapter number 31. Verses 22 through 55. And if you remember last week in the first part of chapter 31, Jehovah calls Jacob out from amongst his kindred, and he called him out from amongst his kindred to return to his kindred, which I find to be quite interesting that he calls him out from amongst his kindred to return to his kindred. I'll touch bases on that. As a matter of fact, I'll touch on it now. Through the promise made to Abraham, Jehovah would establish a new people, a new nation that would become the nation of Israel. And Jacob, whose name will later be changed to Israel, is the embodiment of that promise. Just as Jehovah called Abraham out from amongst his kindred, and called Jacob out from amongst his kindred, Jehovah calls his people out from among them who are not willing to follow only him. When Abraham was amongst his kindred in his country and in his father's house, Father told him to come out from among them. He told him to leave his father's house, leave his country, and to leave his kindred. When Abraham left his father's house and left his country, and left his kindred after they had journeyed to Haran. After Terah died, Abraham took Lot, took Sarah, and all of the souls that he had won, and he came down into the land of Canaan, which he would now promise Abraham that he would give to his descendants. When Abraham left his kindred, Abraham was with kindred. And what happened is that Abraham became the first person of this new nation that was to come. Abraham was one who was given the insight and the wisdom pertaining the gospel of the kingdom. Father, would establish him as one who would be the progenitor of this new nation or this kingdom that would later become the kingdom of Israel. And so when Abraham came out and he began to go amongst a different people, they remained separate within the places that they had gone. The language began to change. The focus began to change. The idolatry ceased. And what we're going to see here is that idolatry was taking place amongst Abraham's kindred, and Abraham became an idolatry-free people and began to teach the people that he had brought out of idolatry about the King of the universe, the King of glory, the God of heaven and earth, as he was introduced to by the Malik Sadiq Melchizedek after he had went to war and recaptured Lot, his family, and the people. And so now Abraham is preaching about the Elohim, the creator of heaven and earth. And up until this point, Abraham didn't know who he was. He knew that he had received a call, but it was Melchizedek that introduced him to the creator, the maker of heaven and earth, with whom Abraham gave a tithe. Now, we don't see anything about Isaac tithing, but we know that Abraham taught Isaac. And when Jacob now is being sent back amongst the kindred, away from kindred to go to a kindred, away from a kindred people who were no longer dabbling in idolatry to a kindred people who dabbled in idolatry, Jacob had an encounter at a place where he called the stairway of heaven, he called it Bethel, the house of Elohim, and he made a covenant with the God of Abraham, the Elohim of Abraham and Isaac. And this covenant is that if you will take me, care for me, clothe me, feed me, and bring me back, then I will give you a tenth, a tithe of all. He would give him a tenth. And so now, Jacob is being called out, and we dealt with that last week. The thing that we're going to see is we cannot worship Jehovah and idols. We cannot worship Jehovah and idols, meaning that you can't have the Almighty but have other avenues, you might say, plan Bs, plan Cs. And here's how people worship the Almighty and idols. They don't call it idols, but how many of you know self-centeredness is idolatry? Anything you look to or listen to besides the Creator is putting something beside Him, putting something before Him. The only thing that we are allowed to put before Jehovah is ourselves in repentance, turning away from self and turning toward His word. When we turn away from self and turn toward His word. And so Father now calls Jacob out. Jacob know there is idolatry amongst him, because we're going to find he spent 20 years with Laban. And I would dare say that in that 20-year period, Jacob has witnessed idolatry. He has witnessed his father-in-law, who is his kindred. He has witnessed possibly his wives. He has witnessed his handmaidens and other people in the culture. And so Jacob knows there is idolatry amongst him, and he's ultimately going to deal with the idolatry in the midst of him in chapter number 35. Between now and chapter number 35, there is no indication of idolatry, but the fact of the matter is, Jacob is going to address idolatry, which suggests that he's aware of idolatry, or else he wouldn't address it. After 3 days, on the third day after Jacob had left and taken his wives, his children, all he had, and fled Laban, it was told Laban. Jacob had fled. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled, verse 22, chapter 31. And here's the thing. Laban took his brethren and pursued Jacob for 7 days. That's a long time, brothers, sisters. That means you're traveling during the day, sleep at night, you're getting up, traveling some more, sleep at night, and they probably had a tracker, but it seemed like if they had a good tracker, it wouldn't have took them 7 days. I mean, you think about it. Jacob was only 3 days ahead of him, possibly 2+ days. Because on the third day is when Laban was told, and Laban, he took his brethren, verse 23, with him, and pursued after him 7 days. After him 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead, or Gilead. Now, somewhere during this time, Jehovah came to Laban in a dream, and he warned him to take heed how he spoke to Jacob. Notice in verse 24, and Elohim came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Now notice, Jehovah was specific that he could not speak to Jacob good or bad. The language suggests be careful how you talk to Jacob. But he doesn't say anything concerning Jacob's wives, only to Jacob. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now, Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs, with tabret and with harp? Now, I didn't say I sent you away empty-handed, but that's what he's saying here. And has not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. Now, these words to me suggest that Laban really didn't know or couldn't hear well, or the interpreters and the words that were chosen, because we're going to see that Laban had a fear of this encounter he had had with Jehovah. But if he told him not to speak to Jacob neither good nor bad, that suggests to me you wouldn't even talk to him, right? That's what it suggests to me. But it doesn't stop Laban from talking. And now he's saying to him, you've done some foolish stuff. That doesn't sound like a good conversation, which suggests it's not a good conversation and making accusations that Jacob has behaved foolishly. And so now Laban shows his intent for pursuing Jacob for 7 days was to hurt him, possibly kill him, and take all his possessions, which Laban laid claim to, as we're going to see here. In verse 29, he says, it is in the power of my hands to hurt you. Now, Laban obviously felt that he had some power and authority, but he felt this way while he was pursuing Jacob all this time, accusing him of taking his daughters and taking his sons. And then he's going to show here that he took his possessions. but the Elohim of your father. And he's not acknowledging that Elohim, but the Elohim of your father spoke unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good nor bad. So Laban heard it. And now thou wouldest needs be gone because thou so longest after thy father's house. Yet wherefore hast thou stolen my God? So now he's accusing, he accuses Jacob of acting foolishly, and now he's accusing Jacob of being a thief after Jehovah has spoken to him. I know you have desired to be at your father's house, but why did you steal my gods from me? That's what he's asking. That's what he's saying. And you can tell, I can tell that by the way Laban is talking to Jacob and acknowledging that it's his God, Laban is looking for his gods. See, and here's the thing about people who are in idolatry. Even the gods they serve, if the gods they serve don't prove themselves to them, they have really no regard for them. Imagine, how can you steal somebody's gods? Now, it's like, Laban, if your God is all that, how can somebody steal him? Shouldn't your God scream or warn you or say something to you? Your God got stolen in the night, taken away from you without your knowledge. In fact, your God was gone 3 days before you knew he was gone. But notice what he said. Notice what he said. He says, and you have stolen my gods, plural. So Laban didn't just have a god. He had a few of them. And they were all gone, it looked like. Or some of them were gone. Maybe some was left behind. But the ones that he really, really wanted and was willing to pursue these people for 7 days, which tells me it was more than just about gods. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, the reason why I left without telling you is because I was afraid. For I said, peradventure, thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me. Now, how would Jacob know that? See, Jacob explained the reason he left the way he did is because he was afraid that Laban would not let him leave with his daughters. Even though Laban had given his daughters to Jacob, he still laid claim to them as his. And Jacob knew he had not taken anything from Laban, but didn't know his wife had stolen Laban's gods. And so in verse 32, it says, with whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let them not live. Before our brethren, discern thou what is thine with me and take it to thee. And so he's saying, I'm giving you permission to search me. And whoever you find your gods amongst, kill them. You see what it says? With whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. That means that if you find your gods with somebody amongst us, take their lives. And so not only you, but your brethren, the brethren that you've been pursuing me with. And see, here's one of those things where I see Father even protecting Jacob's household. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. So Jacob is operating in the integrity of his own heart. He doesn't know what his wife had done. And I suspect that had Jacob knew that she had taken those gods, he wouldn't have won, declared, take their lives, but he would have made them give the gods back. That's the kind of person Jacob is. Now, I know what the commentaries say, and I got commentaries, and they all seem to be, they're quoting one another. They're giving each other their accolades because in their commentary, they're referencing that particular author or that particular commentary. And so they're reading the commentaries of commentators, adding the commentaries of commentators to their commentary. And then others are referencing them. And so you just got one broad sweep of commentaries calling Jacob a deceiver. When the fact of the matter, if you read the text, you'll find that Jacob doesn't operate in that kind of mindset. He's a person of integrity, and he's going to go to extreme as he begins to address Laban about the kind of integrity that he operates in. So Laban went unto Jacob's tents and unto Leah's tents and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And he said to his father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee." And she said to her father, "That I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of woman," in other words, she was on her monthly cycle, "is upon me." And he searched, but found not the image, because she was sitting on him, which indicates that, okay, there was something going on with the monthly cycle, even amongst the people in the culture of Haran. And Jacob was wroth. Now Jacob is, he's upset. And then he begins to chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us." So Jacob has no clue as to what's going on as far as his wife's and her thievery. So Jacob has an audience of Laban, his brethren, and Jacob's family. He calls Laban out in front of everyone, and there's nothing Laban can do about it since he did not find anything of his amongst Jacob's possessions. This 20 years, he says, and now Jacob gives us the rundown. We talked about some of this over the last couple of teachings, but now Jacob gives us the rundown. He says, from the time Jacob came to Laban's house to the time Jacob leaves Laban's house is 20 years have passed. And he says, "This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young." In other words, what he's saying here is that all of your animals have given birth in season. "And the rams of thy flock I have not eaten." In other words, not one of your animals have my teeth chewed its flesh. "That which was torn of beast I brought not unto thee." In other words, if he had Laban's flocks out and a beast took one, Jacob says that he bear the loss. In other words, he replaced what was slaughtered by an animal with his own. Now, his was protected. Laban's got slaughtered. He took one of his own. He says, "I bear the loss of it. My hand, didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night." So what is he saying? "Listen, I'm counting my sheep. When you go out, I want the same amount of sheep to come in when you come in." Now, I find this interesting. He says, "You, I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night." Which suggests to me that Laban kept watch over Jacob and his animals. Which is why it's a little bewildering that he didn't know he was gone for 3 days. Nevertheless, he says, "Thus I was in the day, the drought consumed me, and the frost by night." In other words, if you've ever been in the desert, and even sometimes in the Carolinas, you can have a heat wave in the day and the temperature drop 30, 40 degrees at night, and it'd be cold. Just had a few of those days this week. And this is why it's so important for the pillar of fire by night, because the pillar of fire by night kept Israel warm in the desert. The cloud by day kept the sun from burning them up during the day. So the cloud protected them from the sun during the day, and the fire gave them heat at night. "Thus I have been with you 20 years in your house. I serve you 14 years for your two daughters and 6 years for your cattle. So during the time when he was taking the cattle during the mating time, and he would put the wood up in front of them, and they would mate, and they would produce the offspring. This went on for 6 years. It wasn't a one-night stand. It was for 6 years that during the mating season, Jacob would have these animals mate, and they would produce these ring-striped, spotted, and other. So this went on for 6 years, and he says, you've changed my wages 10 times. See, Laban always wanted to be on top. And if he saw that he was on the bottom, he changed the dynamics. So he would put himself back on top. That's the way some people can be. Jacob knows who has been protecting him all this time because of the vow he made to Jehovah. And Laban took to heart his deeds toward Jacob in light of Abraham and Isaac, and now Jehovah. Because Jacob says, except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hast sent me away now empty. Elohim has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you yesternight. So now Laban told Jacob that he got rebuked, that his Elohim appeared to him. And Jacob is running with it because Jacob knows that the only reason why he had not been sent away up until this point is because of the vow that he had made and the protection that he'd been receiving. And remember last week, we talked about how Jacob saw the signs. Laban's sons were talking. Laban's countenance toward Jacob had changed from what it was before. So there were some real issues, and Jacob is seeing the times. But he's not looking at the signs of the times. He's waiting for the leading of Jehovah. And although the signs was clearly there, he didn't make a move until he heard the voice. Jacob did not know Jehovah had rebuked Laban until Laban told him. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, now here's where it gets interesting. These daughters are my daughters. These children are my children. These cattle are my cattle. And all that thou see is mine. Now the real Laban shows up. But Jacob saw this all alone. And then he says, and what can I do this day unto these my daughters, unto their children which they have borne? You're taking my stuff, taking my children, you're taking my cattle, you're taking every person that is in this caravan, every cattle, every sheep, every goat, every child. It's all mine. And then he says, and what can I do this day unto these my daughters, unto their children which they have borne? So Laban conceded that he had lost because of the Elohim of Jacob. Laban even lost his gods, because notice he didn't get them back. And therefore, the wise thing is to do, and this is where rationale comes in. This is where rationale comes in, people. Laban realizes that, hey, the tables have turned. And the wise thing to do is make covenant because the table had turned toward Jacob's favor. And who turned it? Jehovah did. And now he wants Jacob to promise not to harm him. So he went from a mindset of harming Jacob to being afraid of Jacob. And who did that? The Almighty. And here's a proverb for you. When a man's ways please Jehovah, he maketh even his enemies at peace with him. Father know how to take your enemies and shut them up. He'll take the people who want to hurt you and make them afraid of you. But what is the catch? Your ways must please Jehovah. The psalmist tells us that if we delight ourselves in the law of Jehovah, he grant us the desires of our heart. People got all of this. They got the Proverbs. They got Ecclesiastes. They got the Psalms. They've got the prophets. They've got the writings. They've got Joshua. They've got the writings of Moses. And yet, man has come to the conclusion that they don't have to honor their gods. Today's man and the church have come to the conclusion that they don't have to honor the God of Adam, the God of Noah, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, the God of David. This is the conclusion that right-thinking people have come to, that those laws are antiquated and outdated, that we're not under that anymore. We don't have to deal with that stuff anymore. That's the wisdom of man, which is really foolish. So Laban went from pursuing Jacob to hurt him to wanting a covenant of protection from being harmed. I'm telling you, man, that's the way things work. And for some reason or another, people back then was wiser. I remember one time we were raising money for cameras, and Father told me he had spoke to some people. Now, he didn't tell me who he spoke to, but he told me he had spoke to some people. And I was having a conversation with my sister in Messiah the other day, who reminded me when I started talking about certain things, especially as it related to this building, that it was very hard to come in agreement with the idea that Father would give us a building paid for. And I know I've been dealing with these kinds of odds my entire life, in the sense, especially coming into relationship with the Almighty. But see, I've seen Father do these things before. We've had two buildings prior to this building that was paid for by in cash before we had our services. This is when I was a Christian, when I was in the Christian church. And, you know, it's really strange when it came down to my own personal house. I had no problem borrowing money and, you know, having mortgages. But when it came to the house of Jehovah, I just couldn't see having a mortgage. It just seemed like, you know, I didn't have a problem being a slave in my own finances, but how could I be a slave if the borrower is a slave to the lender? How can I go and borrow money for God's house? You see, I had no problem borrowing money from my house, but for his house, that didn't make sense. And it shouldn't have made sense the other way, but I had that division in my separating me and my way of thinking from my way of thinking concerning the Almighty. And, you know, we learn how to compartmentalize that. Okay, this is my life for God on Sunday, but the rest of the week is my life for me. I'll give God my hour of prayer, or I'll give God my 15 minutes of prayer. I'll give him my time in the closet. But when I come out of the closet, it's my time. I'll talk to him during his time, but during the rest of the day is my time, and we may not talk. So there's this way that we compartmentalize and separate out his authority and sovereignty over our lives and relegate it to a point of time, whether it be in the prayer closet or in the church house. Because even after the church house, you know how we used to do, we go to the eatery or go out to eat or go to the movie, you know, because now that we've given God what belongs to him. So think about that. We've given God his time. But wait a minute, is he Lord of our lives, or he's Lord of our lives during a certain time? That's really the mindset that we develop, and we won't necessarily admit that that's the mindset we develop. But if you look at our fruit, if you look at our actions, if you look at how we spend our day and spend our week, and it's like, okay, here comes Shabbat. Here comes Shabbat. I'm glad Shabbat is coming, because Shabbat, you know, that's prep day. Prep for what? It's preparation to change my way of thinking. It's like, wait a minute. So And now it's after Shabbat. It's, we can go back to the old way of thinking, because during this time, okay, we're going to shut the phones down. We're going to shut everything down. We don't want to have interaction with, you know. It's like, folks, this is what religion did to us. Religion did this to us. And so we put God in a box. There is no box that can hold him. But when our ways please him, when we delight ourselves in him, and this is not something you do at certain times of day, this is what you do all day. Because how can you be praying without ceasing if you only give the time of prayer to a closet space or prayer room? It means that we are to continually be in communion. We're continually allowing him and acknowledging him so he can direct our steps. He can show us, you know, the way. But anyway, this whole idea of the cameras, and there were some people who stepped up to the plate. They stepped up to the plate. Some people stepped up to the plate more than once. And when it was all said and done, and we had acquired what we needed, I had a sister come to me, and she told me, Father told her to be one of those people. But I took the money and I did something else with it. I mean, you know, you're telling me, Father had already told me, not her, but she was one of those people who stated that Father spoke to her about being one of those partners, being one of those donors. I still today don't understand why she told me that. Maybe she was just getting it off her chest or whatever the case may be. But just watching certain things, and here you can see how Father is speaking to people and people are just disobedient. They're not doing what Father said to them. This week, I had a dream. I had a dream. And in the dream, Father showed me, and I don't know if it was one person or two people. I came to the conclusion it was two people, but I don't know. Because Father was saying that there's a person, and here's why I don't know. He gave me two numbers in this dream. One was a seven-figure number, and the other was an eight-figure number, and that it was either one person who was writing a seven-figure check and then changed their mind to an eight-figure check, or it was two people writing two different checks. I don't know. But I know there was two different checks, and it could have come from one person or it could have come from two people. And this is the word Father gave me. If you are that person, you need to contact us. You need to let us know who you are, and you need to follow through on that, because Father wants to do something with you. And then in that, it was like, okay, there's something going on in this person's life. I think it has to do with someone who is going through some physical issues that is dealing with some kind of sickness or not well issue. And Father's going to have me pray for you and pray for that person. And that's all I saw. And so I wasn't planning on saying this until later, but this segue of this person and the cameras and the conversation that I was having concerning this building. See, here's what I know. Because as this time that we're in right now, I know that there are people who are concerned and they're worried. Churches are worried. Different organizations are worried, because if people aren't working, if people aren't going to work, if businesses are closing, then people are going to see their donations go down. They're going to see their contributions go down. They're going to see their tithe go down. They're going to see a need to assist people with resources they don't have. Because government is even trying to stimulate the economy with a $2 trillion package that they can't say when people, they're saying today that there may be 20 weeks before anybody see a check. They just don't know. There's so much uncertainty. But here's the thing. Father has said, listen, I have watched over you. I have protected you. I have provided for you. And here's the thing, brothers and sisters. Something I was going to say earlier just came back to me. Just as Father can make those who pursue you to do harm, can turn their heart toward you, and praying without ceasing and ordering the steps of the righteous, I remember several years ago where Father began to impress upon me, don't just pray for provisions. Ask me to show you where the provisions are. And I changed my prayers. I said, Father, you know the need that I have. Everything that we need is already in the earth. But if I don't have eyes to see it, if you don't lead me to it, if you don't make those connections that I need to make, if you don't connect me to the source, just as he connected the prophets, he brought the raven, he brought the widow, Father know how to tell. He will show you where your river is. He will show you whose house to go to. He will order your steps to where you're in the right place at the right time, making the right connection, which is why it's important for us to hear his voice. So I would pray, Father, show me what my... I wasn't just asking him for provisions. I wasn't just telling him we got needs. You know our needs. You know, you need to meet our needs. Okay, you know, we're running up on a deadline. It's like, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? What you gonna do? No, he says, you pray. You want me to order your steps? Let me lead you. Let me guide you. Let me give you the right connection. And I begin to pray. Show me where the provisions are. Show me where the provisions are. If it's in the earth, I need to know where they are. What connection do I need to make? Show me my connections. Show me the people that I'm supposed to connect to. Show me the people I'm not supposed to be connected to. Because understand something. I heard a preacher say this. I won't mention their names because some of y'all might tune me out. But he said, when God want to bless you, he'll put a person in your life. He said, when the devil wants to curse you, he'll put a person in your life. Your job is to know, are you for me or are you against me? Who you working for? Who sent you? What's your purpose? What? And you'll know them by their fruit. Not their words, not their flattery, not the things they say, but the things they do. You'll know a tree, brothers and sisters, by its fruit. And so we have to be fruit checkers. You have to know what kind of fruit is manifesting in the midst of you. And if it show you its fruit, don't ignore it. Don't listen, you know, lie to me. Tell me sweet nothings. I'm not interested in your sweet nothings. I'm interested in your actions. I'm interested in what you do, not what you say. You can apologize. You can say you're sorry 1,000 times. But if you're saying you're sorry 1,000 times, that means you may have 1,000 times worth of saying you're sorry for 1,000 times of actions. It's like, how many times do I need to see you not follow through? How many times do I need to forgive your excuse? Because, see, if I'm continuing to act as if you are accountable, trustworthy, one who say what you're going to do and do what you're going to say, and you consistently show me you're not that person, how many times do I have to deal with this before I get the revelation? Hello. Maybe I'm not a good fruit inspector. Like, you know, one person said, fool me once. Shame on somebody. Shame on you. I was thinking about a well-known president in our modern history but anyway, some of y'all got that. Some of y'all just went right over your head. Now, therefore, come thou, let us make a covenant. So Laban is having this, he's like, you know what, I get it, God. I know if I put a hand on this man, you done already told me what you're going to do. But if I don't put a hand on this man, he's got the, you know, he done already, Jacob got bold. Let's go back to this. What did he say? Verse 36. Now, Jacob was fleeing, but all of a sudden, Jacob got some gumption. Jacob got angry. This passive aggressive had fled. And now he chode. It's like he's standing toe to toe with Laban, the man that he was running from, and very careful about, because He perceived Laban's power to hurt him, to take from him, to send him on his way empty-handed. And now Jacob is traveling with women and children and handmaids. Laban got some brothers with him, right? Laban is not coming for, you know, to have a meal. He's coming to take some stuff. He got a posse. But Jacob now, all of a sudden, you know, once he heard, once he found out that Jehovah had dealt with Laban, Jacob got a little concrete in his heels. I'm telling you, when, you know, the Bible says that those who know their Elohim shall be strong. Are you hearing me? When you know he got your back, what you scared of? There's nobody to fear. He hasn't given us a spirit of fear. He's given us power. And Jacob now taps in. And he understands. See, he was smart enough. It was like, you know how sometimes when children are in their parents' house and they serve their parents' God, that they really don't know their parents' God is their own. But when his mom and dad sent him away, Jacob had one of them, God, if you real, you know, he had one of them kind of prayers. God, if you real. And I can imagine that Jacob is questioning the realness of God for those 14 years. Because after all, Jacob has worked 14 years for these two women and those two handmaidens, four women. But it seems like it wasn't until the last 6 years when Jacob had this dream. In that 15th year, it seems as if Father showed up and had a conversation with Jacob after 14 years. Now, he'd been tricked the first 7 years, and there's no indication where he had any relationship or any communication. And then he worked another 7 years, and there's no indication during this time that there was a conversation between him and the Almighty until the Almighty showed him in a dream what to do. The angel of the Lord showed up, it seemed like around the 15th year. I'm telling you, that's a lot of time for Jacob to go, and I would dare say he questioned when he had that dream about these cows. And then Father specifically told him it's time to go. And even though he told him it was time to leave, Jacob stole away. He snuck out. He didn't go boldly out. He snuck out. And so I suggest that Jacob wasn't real sure about this relationship. But when Laban said, he showed up. And he told me not to say anything, you know, to speak to you on any wise as far as good or bad. I can imagine, okay, my God. And that gave Jacob courage. And so he chides with Laban and he says, now therefore come, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And I wanted to point something out here, the Aramaic and the Hebrew. Laban called it Jeger Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Two different names, two different languages for the same place. The Jeger Sahadutha is Aramaic. The Galeed is Hebrew. Now, if you look at the Aramaic Hebrew writing in the letters, it's the same as the Hebrew. Why? Because it's being translated. It's being translated from Aramaic to Hebrew. Just as when the Phoenicians talk, what they're speaking is in Hebrew, but they're not speaking Hebrew. Why? Because you're reading the translation. Somebody is translating the Canaanite language, translating the language of Abimelech. They're translating it. And when a person now is learning Hebrew, they think that they're learning the original information, but if it was true to form, you will have Aramaic words and Hebrew words. And there would be a distinction between the Aramaic words and the Hebrew words and the Canaanite words and the Hebrew words. There would be a distinction, which means that you would now have to learn another language. So they've taken the language that was spoken and brought it over into the Hebrew. And this is where you'll find that if you go and look up the word, it's a Hebrew word, but it's actually a Aramaic word. And Aramaic and Hebrew is two different languages. Aramean has to do with the Syrian culture. When Father brought Abraham out as a Syrian, the Bible tells us that when it came down to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, they were wandering Arameans as far as, but Abraham became the first person recognized as a Hebrew. And so the languages are a mixture of different phonics. And now what we have is everything, whatever the language was, is being dished to us as Hebrew, you see. Oftentimes when people are trying to learn biblical Hebrew, what they're learning is that they're learning rabbinic Hebrew. And you know, as anybody else, that if you really want to master a particular language, you now have to immerse in the culture. And if you're learning the Hebrew and you got to immerse in a culture, what culture do you immerse yourself in? The Jewish culture. And many people confuse Hebraism and Hebraic with Jewish. You know, you got to have a Hebraic mindset. Really, you mean a Jewish mindset, because all the stuff you're doing seems to be in the Jewish culture. You see. But there's all this deception that's going on, and people get animated and hysteric, you know, because they come into some Jewishness. When the Bible is not a Jewish book, you need to understand that. Now, Yeshua may have come from the line of Judah, but Yeshua wasn't Jewish. He was Hebrew. So let's not confuse Hebraism with Judaism. It's two totally different things. Yeshua the Hebrew had a problem with the Jewish roots. People say, well, you know, we need to return to our Jewish roots. No, we don't, because if you go to Jewish roots, you're going to Judaism. That's where you're going, straight to Judaism. Next thing you know, you find yourself in a synagogue somewhere, reciting prayers and saying things God said that he didn't say. Blessed are thee, O Lord, who have commanded us to kindle the Sabbath light. Really? Blessed are you, O Lord, who have commanded us to wash our hands. Really? It's a lot of things that people are saying Jehovah said that he ain't saying. That stuff is not coming from him, it's coming from them. And you have to make the distinction, lest you find yourself practicing tradition, thinking you're keeping the word. And there's a lot of people out there who are practicing traditions, thinking that they're keeping the word, don't even know that they're being moved away from the word. And I'm not Jew bashing. I'm just telling you what it is. And the man said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galeed and Mizpah. For he said, the Jehovah watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. So what does he do? He acknowledges Jacob's Elohim. Because here's what he says. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take, let me go back. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap and behold this pillar, which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness and this pillar be witness that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. In other words, bro, I came to do you some harm, but I realized that that's not a good idea. And so now I need you to swear to me you won't harm me. Now that I realize that your Elohim is, you know, he's somebody. The heap or pillar of stones were like a border or a mark in the geography. In other words, this place right here, bro, I'm on this side. You going this way. If you ever come back this way, to my side. Remember, we got a covenant. You won't hurt me. Isn't that what he said? This heap be witness and this pillar be witness that I will not pass over this heap to thee. Not to harm him. That's missing. And thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. Laban had a change of heart. The fear of Jehovah brought him to a place of repentance. Although he didn't start serving Jacob's Elohim. Notice what he said in verse 53. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father. So we know that Abraham was the only one. Nahor was his brother. Haran was his brother. Terah was his father. Terah was an idol worshiper. Nahor didn't follow Abraham. Haran died. There's no indication that any of Abraham's brother, and certainly not his father, worshiped the Almighty. But Laban says the God of Abraham, okay, that's one God. And the God of Nahor, that's a different God, the God of their father. Now, I don't know if the God of their father was named Nahor or Nahor and Terah God. But at one point, it was Abram's God until God told Abraham to leave. Get out from amongst them. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. The God of Nahor and the God of Terah had no names, unless it was the God of Nahor. And I should have put a little space in between that. It's not the continuation of the verse. But we see that Laban is beseeching. It's like, okay, your God is here, and the God of Nahor and the God of Terah is here. Then Jacob, and I guess Laban's God is stolen, so he don't know who to swear by because he can't find his gods. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mountain, called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread and tarried all night in the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons. Notice it didn't say kiss his grandsons, because the word grandson is not found in the Torah. So a grandson becomes like a son, and the great-grandson becomes like a son, because these terms didn't exist in this ancient writing. And early in the morning, Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. And you'll find also the same with grandmothers. The word grandmother doesn't show up until the New Testament in the Greek language. It doesn't show up in the ancient Hebrew. And so that brings us to the end of this chapter.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. You can find more inspirational teachings and download our free ebooks on our ministry website at arthurbaileyministries.com. Please follow us on Facebook at House of Israel-Arthur Bailey Ministries, on Instagram at Apostle Arthur Bailey, on Twitter at Apostle Bailey, and you can subscribe to our YouTube page at Apostle Arthur Bailey 1. If you're in the Charlotte area, please come and fellowship with us. We'll do our best to make you feel right at home. Our address is on our website at the About link under Contact Us. Again, thank you for joining us, and until next time, Shalom, Saints.